Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And this is another hopefully great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. And tonight's show actually deals with that issue of what is spirit, the meaning of spirit. I thought it would be good to talk about that since, you know, the kind of like the byline of the show is on spirituality. I've sometimes defined it relatively, we'll say, thinly, because it's usually tied to many other concepts. But tonight I thought I'd talk about spirit in general and what it is, where it comes from, how does it affect everything else in the universe, and why it's so important that it's really the byline of this show. But I also want to mention, if you would like to call in, you can, by calling 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. And for those of you in Canada, how about 888-815-9756? Okay, so let's talk about spirit. Spirit is a fascinating and, I'll say, all-encompassing subject because the best way to start off in defining it is as the thought of the creator of our universe. That's the best way to understand spirit. Spirit is thought. But it isn't just any old thought. It's thought that in one way or another, and there's lots of ways, there's so many we can't imagine, that it touches upon and affects everything else in the universe. It has an affinity for form or matter, in our case, for those of us who live in the physical dimension, and it seeks to create and sustain and grow more of life that is more and more resembling of our Creator. As a matter of fact, you could say that its very existence is hinged upon that concept. So in other words, the thought of our Creator is to create more and more of life that resembles closer and closer the nature of our Creator, and that it eventually thinks like our Creator because the spirit becomes the dominant element in the life. This doesn't happen until you reach, at a minimum, human life. So it's very interesting to look at the spectrum of life and how spirit affects it in describing the meaning of spirit. And I thought I would use that as a kind of means to explain this great idea that our Creator came up with. Now, it's also important to recognize that spirit is not just some kind of, you know, higher thought, like a great, great thought that only some of us can experience, maybe, and that has a limitation on itself, like it is a thing that doesn't change. This is the thought, and this thought doesn't change kind of idea. As a matter of fact, it's exactly the opposite, and that's what is confusing to many people if they've ever studied anything that is spiritual, because the very nature of understanding spiritual things comes from understanding what spirit is. And unfortunately, in most sources that I have come in contact with, I'm not saying all, spirit is left relatively undefined. I know that sounds strange, because after all, if you're reading spiritual teachings, if you're writing spiritual things, if you're living spiritually, shouldn't the concept of what spirit is be the primary foundation to everything else? One would think that. But because spirit is not written in stone, and quite the opposite, because it is not specifically set a certain way by our Creator, it defies and confounds many human minds, because we seek to know something supposedly as an absolute. And spirit is the furthest absolute you can imagine, from being an absolute, as you can imagine. Why is that? Let's start off with the why, and then I'll explain what. But the why is because a growing part of the Creator that enters into form and creates life that not only resembles eventually the Creator because it's part of the Creator's thought, but it changes as each life that uses Spirit uses it to think and co-create with its own Creator. This is the amazing thing about Spirit, is that it isn't a thing that you can say, well, it's that thought or this thought. It's a collection of growing thought that grows beyond the original thought of its own Creator, our Creator. Am I confusing you? I hope not. Because, you see, this is the difficulty in understanding Spirit, is that it isn't, it's this moving, growing target that I think is the reason, and I could be wrong about this, that so many books and so many explanations are devoid of, because it's maybe difficult for those who write about it to understand or to convey it in some way. I'm hoping today's show will go a long way to resolving what I consider to be one of the great and terrific means of really getting to know and understand not only our Creator, but our ability to become part of our Creator, and also for us to maybe have some sympathy and empathy with those who are confused by Spirit, those who deny the existence of Spirit, those who think that anything that is spiritual is nonsense, and those who maybe deny the very existence of God or a Creator. And the reason for it, again, is if you are looking for something that is absolute to prove or to go by what God is, you're an illusion. Now, that's difficult for some people to swallow, I know, because it is in contradiction to a number of religions which tend to try to use Spirit and spirituality as their foundation when they either don't try or they mis-explain what Spirit is. And then that gets them in trouble, and it creates this backlash of people who are maybe able to at least figure that what's being extolled as what God is doesn't make any sense. So ultimately, anything, anyone who claims that Spirit is blank, 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 and has a bunch of guidelines and tells you exactly how to know it, how to function within it, etc., they have to be an illusion, if I'm right, that Spirit is a growing thought that can only be grown by co-participating in the creation of more of our Creator through the development of more spiritual life. Very interesting stuff. I hope I'm not confusing you all. I'm going a little bit slower even as I speak right now because I know that the abstraction of this thing is so difficult, and it is the crux of the problem. Okay, how come a great being, great enough to create a universe that we are even barely understanding right now in its dimensionality and its time and space and all the things that are presently mostly missing in our scientific understanding, how can this great being do something that, or create something that, for reasons that appear to be very important, but we, many people don't seem to get, confuses and confounds so many? And the reason has to be the following. The first part of Spirit is freedom of thought and choice itself. So when God starts out the system, it does have some basics, but those basics can radically change over time. And one of the basics I propose, although many writers have written the same thing, I don't want you to think, well, gee, I just woke up one day and I came to this. No, this goes back prehistory. But I want to explain it. and that is that the first component, some people call it the first part of our Creator's mind, is actually the concept that there must be freedom of choice, freedom of thought itself. And if there isn't freedom, then the ultimate end to any process is non-growth. Meaning that instead of our Creator, who seeks to grow, seeks to become something greater than it was, in order for that to happen, it has to create something besides itself that it fosters and further develops in this creation that is free to choose and free to even contradict and go against its own Creator or deny its own Creator. And this is just the beginning of the freedoms that are given freely. I guess that's a little contradictory in itself, or maybe a little silly. Yeah, they're freely given. Freedoms are freely given. And what it means to us is that in the process, we cannot rely upon anyone or even ourselves deluding ourselves to believe that we were meant to only think a certain way, only act a certain way, only live a certain way, because any of that denies our own expression of freedom and that of others. I hope that makes some sense to you. For those of you who are inculcated with a certain doctrine of a religion, this may be a little hard for you, because the very concept of doctrine in and of itself, unless the doctrine is what I just described, that there is no doctrine, which I guess you could paradoxically claim, the very concept of most doctrines are to limit and restrict choices and to prevent people from moving in directions away from the organized expression and thought of those who have created a specific doctrine. So you see, a problem lies in human need to control and to have others who are doing similar controls so that everyone can copacetically kind of get along, I guess, with each other and not have any significant disagreement while achieving certain maybe self-fulfilling and also self-desiring goals, which may not be anything about the Creator itself. This is the way we tend to exist in this reality, the physical one, more so than not. So, of course, our religions and doctrines of religions tend to espouse these very issues. Okay, the second part of spirit, the first part is this great, we'll call it freedom to choose, that seems to paradoxically confuse people who are indoctrinated with religious ideas, certain religious ideas. But ultimately, it is the freeing source. It's what gives us the opportunity to become something greater than our Creator originally was. As we grow, our Creator grows. So ultimately, the Creator continues to develop. But the Creator becomes something greater than it was by this amazing process that it chooses to first create. The second part of the spirit, that is the thought of our Creator, is not so much, we'll call it freedom, as it is the ability to inclusively recognize a oneness between itself and others. And the reason it can do this is because the Creator already knows in its native form, before it starts to grow through the life that it helps to develop, it already knows that the One is a part of itself. And as all others grow in differentiation, all others as the One are also part of God, and God grows, as I said a minute ago. And that concept develops the second part of spirit. It's the part that some people refer to as universal love. It's also universal consciousness. These are all words that describe this vastly greater, bigger concept of oneness, of inclusiveness of all. Because ultimately that is what the Creator chose for its thought to be. It doesn't mean that that thought is the only thought that every life creates and thinks for itself. It means that only when life chooses to think in both freedom and the expansion of consciousness, understanding of love, universal love, and inclusiveness and oneness with all else, that it can then co-create with its Creator and become more spiritual, more of the spirit that is the thought of its own Creator. It does this by the spirit that is within it joining with the spirit that is within other parts of life. And so amazingly, God gave us a great gift, the gift of both freedom of choice and freedom to become more one while developing great individuality and great creativity with its own Creator. An amazing thing. The freedom gives us the ability to be creative. And the second part, the universal love, inclusiveness, the universal consciousness gives us the ability to simultaneously become more one with everything while we become more creative as truly individuals. I know that's hard to understand. Many people get confused by that. They think, well, how can you become one way and it isn't against the other? But it is possible because that's what spirit is. It makes the seeming impossible possible. The reason it seems impossible to us as human beings, well, especially while we physically are alive, is because we live in a tremendous illusion. That illusion is that everything is separate, and as we make choices, those choices separate us from everything else. That's true if we don't include the second part that makes what spirit is, the thought of God, in somewhat equal amounts. When the two are balanced, then we have truly the ability to become great individuals, great creators, while we also become more and more one with everything else that is like our Creator. We may not become one with those things that are antagonistic to our Creator, because those things are trying to destroy what the Creator made, or they are at least in ignorance doing so. And we may choose that we are not part of that. We may even choose we are against it. But ultimately, we see that that part which is even against us and against other things is ultimately necessary because it is a result of there being enough freedom for it to exist. We have to at least accept its right to do that, even if we reject its actions and prevent it from doing destructive things on occasion. You see, it's so amazing to get to these really big, big ideas because it explains so many of the conflicts that people have about spiritual issues. If you don't understand spirit, you truly will not understand God. And you won't understand most religions. And you'll either blindly obey them, which I think is possibly just as dangerous as rejecting them, or you'll reject them. And in either case, they don't necessarily stand for the spirit of God. They stand in for a kind of very shallow definition and explanation of spiritual. Hopefully I'm expanding some of that tonight. Okay, so where does that lead us? We have a Creator who decides as a basic what its thought is, because that's what its thought is. But it also decides that this thought is nowhere near what it wants to become. But at the same time, it leaves it open for its own development to come from that which it creates initially, which we call life, and it becomes much more on target, much more about spirituality when you begin life in the human kingdom. Now, life really doesn't begin in the human kingdom. I should say when you begin spiritual life in the human kingdom. Because as a life form becomes more dominated by the spirit within itself, which is what happens as humans are developed over time, then they express a spirituality which grows the creator much more than the lower life forms do. Now you say, well, then what use are the lower life forms if they're not really doing the spirit thing? Well, that's where we get into the question of evolution versus spiritual development. The lower life forms cannot garner enough understanding of spirit, enough expression of spirit within an individual life form, or even sometimes within the collection of a number of life forms of similar type, to be able to express a significant element of their own creator. It depends. And even if they can collectively, doing so individually is almost never the case. There's some rare exceptions of pets, advanced pets of some humans, but most of the time, almost all the life around us that is non-human is in a struggle of forces imposing themselves upon this life, and the life, the spirit that's in the life, being dominated by energy and forces, rather than being able to express itself individually, creatively, while it can identify in consciousness the oneness of all life. That's why you don't see animals practicing the kinds of things that humans do. Animals don't go around marching for the development and saving of our world or saving of a whole bunch of species or even a certain species. They may love a certain group of animals that they are connected to or that they can identify with in some way. But love in itself is not sufficient, particularly that limited form of love. They don't have universal love. They don't have consciousness of oneness of life itself, and they don't recognize a creator. Because to do so, you have to do the two things I said. You have to exercise the ability to be creative, and you have to exercise the ability to see a oneness between yourself and another life. And they miss that. And that's true of animals. You can imagine how much more true that is of life forms that are even less sentient than animals typically are. So in plants, as an example, they can't exercise this type of spirituality. That doesn't mean there isn't spirit involved in their creation, because there has to be, by my own definition. But the spirit that's involved in their creation, again, is overwhelmed, at least in the dimension we live in, and particularly the lowest dimensions, not just this one, which is the lowest, but even above this, the astral dimension, some people refer to. Those dimensions are too limiting, because the energy is overwhelming the spirit. It creates a resistance to spirit being able to fully operate within the mind of the life that exists at those levels. So consequently, it's only humans and beyond that have this capability. We are the true proponents of the, at least the beginning to live in a spiritual way. We can, if we choose, although it's a difficult choice for many while they're physically alive, to live our lives dominated by spirituality. Isn't that wonderful? What a beautiful thing that humans have. But it's also a painful and suffering event for many people. Let me explain how that happens. Because we still live in a sea of forces, and we are affected by some of the same conditions that lower life is, which is evolutionary, we, among ourselves and within nature, but more among ourselves than within nature, we create great forces among us. Those forces come from the illusion that we are separate and the illusion that we can control and we can overpower others through energy. We seek to, we'll say, worship form over spirit, and we seek to exercise our ability to change form and to use form to expand our senses and bodies, which we call civilization, to enslave others and sometimes to destroy others. This could be humans as a life form or lower forms of life as well. Even pre-life that isn't even yet alive, like minerals, we exploit and abuse. This process causes tremendous suffering because it tends to reduce our ability to see ourselves as one, and it makes us feel incredibly isolated and lonely and to fear death. These are the outcomes of our choices to become, we'll say, selfish and to find ourselves as nothing more than something to do with form rather than to be spirit. Those of the humans who do not identify with spirit suffer severe consequences, no matter how humanitarian they might be, or how, at least in a personal sense, they seem loving. They, underneath it all, they suffer immensely. The fears, the pressures, the tremendous, tremendous losses from not feeling one with their creator and recognizing this one with oneness with all others. This is a terrible, terrible consequence to pay. And all of us, to some extent, if we're human, while we're physically alive particularly, due to our illusions, are experiencing different elements and different parts of this. Some of us are living under much worse conditions than others because whole countries sometimes are subjected by these illusionary thoughts, oftentimes coming from regimes that are toxic to life and destructive to their own citizens. It's really a terrible thing. And it's something for us to pay great attention to as we talk more about this subject for the rest of the show. Now, we're going to take a break here, and I want to mention we have, again, a new sponsor, who I hope you will listen to their commercial at the end of the show. But before we exit the show, I'm going to also have give an opportunity for another commercial of this sponsor. So I would like you to listen in, and I will be back in about 3.5 minutes, give or take, from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Imagine for a moment that you are transported back to 1909, 100 years ago, but you retain your memory of all the advances which occurred in 100 years. Airplanes, cell phones, the internet, TV, space travel. Now, come back to 2009. Do you think progress will stop? What will be the most significant happening of the next 100 years? Leo Kim's book, Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality, will reveal to you the new scientific revolution and the power of the mind, wirelessly connected to the universe, will be the event which changes our world by healing many rifts and by changing our lives. Progress will not stop, and neither will you. Get Leo Kim's book at Amazon.com or visit HealingTheRiftBook.com.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about the meaning of spirit. And I'm trying to explain this elusive subject, hopefully in a way that makes some sense, because it's one of the most difficult things to explain due to the fact, as I said earlier, spirit itself is a moving target. It isn't like, gee, this is spirit, these five pages in this book, and you know what spirit is. Spirit is growing and changing every second throughout the universe. And it grows the most in the parts of life we call human and beyond. Now, there is some spirit that is involved in the creation of all life. And that comes from things called group souls that inform large numbers, usually, of life forms. Like, genus group of life that might be relatively small in terms of the type of life it is, but it might have billions or millions of little tiny life forms of various types. So interestingly, spirit is involved in that creation, but it grows very slowly in that kind of life. So the type of spirit that may be involved to create like an earthworm is really significant in some respects. But what it contributes to the Creator is relatively small, even to a human being. And we are nothing like our Creators in truth. We resemble our Creator more than life below us, but we're still not anywhere near being our Creators. What is an earthworm to a human being? We look at that as a very low form of life, contributing a relatively small but important element to life, in how they till the soil and they dissolve and digest wastes and other things. I mean, they have a great purpose, but we don't see them as great spiritual developments in life itself. And yet, they are contributing, and collectively, as a group, they do a great thing. It has beauty to it. But I think that the point I'm trying to make here is that if you're dealing with a life form that as an individual makes significant advances to its creator and by co-creating with its creator, we have to talk about humans and beyond. Now, what would be beyond humans, since I mentioned that? Beyond humans, the spirit part of life becomes the dominant element. Unlike in humans, where humans are caught between the spirit part of life and the form part, we're in constant conflict almost, and fighting between these two, oftentimes suffering as a result. But once you go beyond human, that no longer happens. The form part of life is, at a minimum, always in balance. Well, I shouldn't say always, but at least in balance, that's a better way of putting it, at least in balance with the spirit part, producing no less through balance a type of life that at a minimum does no less than grow a third of the type of ways that its own creator can grow. Eventually, it gives up some of the balance for something that's even greater. And that greater part is to actually contribute to the enhancement of the growth of all life at the same time. In other words, the first part of life beyond human grows its creator at a minimum of one-third of what the creator is, but eventually, you can even go beyond that type of life and grow all of life at the same time, not at the same amounts, but at least at the same time, because that's the reason there's not a perfect balance. And it's amazing to think about that one life form, like a human being that's become super, super human, can choose to co-create with its creator in such a way that all the life that surrounds that being grows and develops from every interaction and every thought that being creates. Amazing. Now that's a super, super human. That's beyond us by a long shot. And it doesn't suffer any longer the elements that we have from the separation between form and spirit. Now you might say, why does spirit and form have a problem getting along? I mean, after all, if God created spirit to join with form, and to become this thing we call life, then what the heck is the problem? And why is it in these lower realms, particularly where humans are found, like the lower mental, or monastic, the astral, and the physical, the etheric physical, where we are, how come there's such a problem? And the answer is the following. In order for our creator to grow the most, there has to be the greatest level of challenges available for that growth to take place. It's not a game of challenges like, gee, I think I can win or lose this. It's more about what is the maximum amount of growth that can be attained within this great universe that was created by this creator. And the maximum amount is the place where the greatest level of potential separation occurs between the thought of the creator and the remaining part of the creator's mind, which we eventually identify as energy and eventually form. So, interestingly, the more difficult it becomes, the greater the level of potential creation, and the more freedom there is to create, and the more possibility there is to be inclusive. Now you might say, well, I don't get the inclusiveness. I can follow the creation part. But what about this inclusiveness business? How is it inclusive to have this tremendous initial separation that's so hard to overcome? Well, that's the whole point. Once you do overcome it, your level of inclusiveness is far greater than it would be if there was no challenge to overcome it in the first place. Do you see what I'm saying? So ultimately, this is a gift. It seems like not much of one right now to those who are living, and particularly in this planet right now. It's a difficult place. But it is a gift because it permits us to truly gain a greater understanding of spirit and to use the spirit to be much more creative and much more loving, universally so, much more conscious and gain consciousness faster than if we were to only live in a much higher and easier dimension of time and space. Living in the astral particularly and the etheric physical definitely, compared to, say, the lower mental dimensions, is a much, much harsher, more forceful, more separating experience. But also the one that challenges us the most, to grow the most, and to become more spiritual faster. I hope that makes some sense to you. So then what does it mean for us to become more spiritual in general? How do we exercise this if we're going to really make a difference and become something greater? Well, the first is to, I think, my opinion now, is to recognize the concepts that I'm explaining this evening. Because if you don't, you fall into this illusion thing where you just end up shadowboxing and having nothing more than struggles against forms instead of recognizing what it is you're doing and why it is you're doing it. And once you have the higher notions of existence, life takes on a different meaning. The meaning part of life is really the reward for living it. And those that don't get the concepts that I'm explaining, at least at a minimum on a subconscious level, experience a lack of meaning in life. They find life to be flat. They find life to be hostile and lonely and fearful. Instead, the other side of the equation, which is difficult for many people to really experience, is to experience the tremendous closeness we develop in ourselves with others, and particularly with our Creator, as we overcome the tremendous struggles that exist while we're physically alive, for sure. I want to pay attention more to the physical side of it right now, because that's where I assume virtually everybody who can hear my voice is living in. So ultimately, the physical existence becomes the greatest of all challenges. And for human beings, the greatest meaning comes from bringing together within themselves a unity between the material side of existence with the form side. With the spiritual side, so that the two become truly a single existence. What does that mean? It means the following. It means to express in one's daily activities, in one's daily thought, in one's daily interactions, a true balance for the respective form, while at the same time giving others the opportunity to freely think and to become more and more conscious. If you can do those things that I just said, life becomes incredibly meaningful, but you have to do it for others. Remember, that's what I said, for others. You can't do it for yourself. This is the illusionary part. There's no way to gain co-creation with your Creator when your focus is on yourself. Only when you do it for others, and especially when you do it to help others to do it for further others, the pay it forward kind of thing, that you really achieve the oneness and the meaning that is so important to gather in living spiritually. This is what spiritual life is really about. Why is it so difficult for us to get that? Well, partly because we have to do it together. We can't really choose to live a life in a cave somewhere and achieve these results. It's best to do it while you function with others who are doing a similar kind of thing. That spiritual group life, you might call it. That's how souls really function. They don't see themselves as alone. They may see themselves as individuals being creative, but they still see themselves functioning together. That's a critical element. It's not the only element, but it is critical to have it. Another part of this equation in developing a spiritual life is that you don't become obsessed with either side. Some people lose, and this is going to sound strange, some people lose their spiritual nature by focusing in on trying to be spiritual. If you focus in on only trying to be spiritual, but at the same time, forget that there is a form nature that is part of existence, and particularly true while you're physically alive, then what happens is the form becomes ignored. The form becomes resistant to becoming one with the spirit that is within the form. And then the form becomes an albatross, bringing us down by various catastrophes and by eventually a non-willing, unparticipating form that no longer is going to keep us in unity and together with our Creator. The Creator includes form as life. If you deny form, if you're a Gnostic, that's an old term for someone who denies form, then what happens is you may think that knowledge and thought, etc., are the most important things, while at the same time you ignore the body and bodies of others and the forms of life in general, the aesthetics of the beauty of form within a world as rich as the one we live in. And then tremendously negative things can take place as a result of such thought. As a matter of fact, people who used to be in ancient times Gnostics usually ended up with very bad lives. Sometimes they were brutally destroyed, or they just didn't, their lives did not turn out too good. And that's because they had this over-accentuation of spirituality without trying to recognize that the form had to be part of it because it's part of God. So that's one problem. What about the other side? What about those who say, well, I'm just going to live my life to get as much as I can of material things. I want to have nice cars and houses and clothes, and I want to have a lot of excitement and fun in the material sense. I want to have a lot of electronic things and other gizmos and all this stuff. How does that then contaminate the problem? Well, it's no different than the spiritual excesses. Those people who do that, they lose their ability to be co-creative with their Creator. They could be very creative in other ways. They might be able to make themselves have the most universally accepted types of forms and with the most interesting toys on the planet and everything else. But at the same time, they can't use that to co-create with their Creator, because unless they're going to take everything they have and give it to others in some meaningful way, all it does to have all these things is to reduce their existence. Now, if they are using the things they have to help others and to be creative, that's a different issue. You see, you can't make the statement, you give everything away. You don't want to do that. You want to have form as part of spirit and balanced in your life. That's a hard thing for us to understand. Many people think that the life of an aesthetic person who gives away everything is a good way to live. Well, maybe for a few people that will work. There may be some unusual circumstances, but in most cases, that's not going to work. Because we came to the physical part of the universe, the most dense form of the universe, to create God here. And God is not just spirit. God is also spirit joined with form to represent God in a higher and greater and better way. So you have to use forms. Too many people don't know that. Too many people reject forms because they are spiritually ambitious. They think that will make them more spiritual, so they'll just reject all form. But you can't do that either. That's not going to work. But unfortunately, it is one of the illusions, and sometimes it's even a belief structure. And it's also a proponent in some kinds of religions. Some sects in certain religions believe that. Benedictine monks might be accused of that. So you have these issues that are so interesting, but so complicated, and so difficult for some people to understand what spirituality is. The meaning of spirit. The meaning of spirit is to exist as one with our Creator by creating more of our Creator. And it means that we have to change that which is existent around us. We can't just collect it. We can't ignore it. And we can't attempt to destroy it or to pervert it. We have to instead make it into what a Creator is. What is the Creator? The Creator is cooperative and sharing. loving in a sense of wanting to grow by giving more to others and the joy of giving, truthful, and beyond truth, wise, great wisdom, beautiful, tremendously beautiful, and omniscient, and beyond that, omnipotent and all-powerful, but at the same time, giving power to all life so that life grows more in the process. Never using power to restrict the growth of life, but only to expand it. And then universally loving, and finally, universally co-creative with everything else in the universe all at the same time. That's what we are attempting to do. Those are the seven major ways of creating ourselves into our Creator. And the more that we can use the spirit or mind of our Creator with form, the more we can achieve results that eventually lead to those levels. Now, beyond the wisdom that I mentioned, you start getting into superhuman, beyond human conditions. It's very difficult for humans to even create beauty and omniscience, which is another stage, sometimes referred to as the intuitional or Buddhic development. Each of these are connected to a body, a form part of us, that is connected to an entire dimension of time and space. That dimension itself is connected to all the life in that dimension, and that is therefore connected and then connected to all of God. Do you see how it works? It's so amazing. We are plugged in. We are literally plugged in most while we are physically alive, because we exist then on more dimensions of time and space than at any other time while we're human. Now, true, when we go to superhuman conditions, we can reach more levels of time and space, and we can get much closer to our Creator and co-create at a much higher level. Isn't that fantastic? I love it. And that is the real meaning of being spiritual. That is the real meaning of spirit itself. To understand everything I've explained this evening is to put you much closer to the reality of what it means to be a spiritual person. And hopefully I'll hear from some of you and you'll let me know what you think about this, because I hope this has made some sense this evening, because I certainly wanted to. Now, I want to also mention that we're going to have a commercial as soon as I stop talking. And this commercial is for a sponsor who is sponsoring the show, someone who wants to help the show to get out there while they also let you know about a book or two and some other things they're doing. And so you can pay attention to this, and then we're going to just slide off the air, so to speak, do our extra from the show. But please stay tuned, because this is an opportunity to hear something a little bit different about someone else who's doing something that is in the metaphysical and spiritual area. So until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.
People ask Leo Kim why he wrote Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality. He wrote it to empower you, to explain how you can discover the spiritual you, reveal your passions, realize your purpose, and find greater happiness in life, how to deal with death and illness of friends and loved ones, and to tell you about the healing mind, how changing your mind can and does change your brain, your health, and your life. Spiritual teachings, when merged with 21st century scientific teachings, will transform our lives. Leo Kim wanted to write in layman's terms for the non-scientists on what exciting benefits will occur in the 21st century when we heal the rift between science and spirituality. Buy Healing the Rift at bookstores, Amazon, or email him for a discounted copy at leo@healingtheriftbook.com.